Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kim. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 314, recorded December 5th, 2016.
Greetings, Aquarimaxers!
Hello!
Well, this is kind of a funny episode. It's going to be short, but it's not going to be that short, hopefully. But it's we don't have any contributors yet. There are some other ones coming up soon. But a few announcements I need to make about what's coming up,
mm-hmm.
right? Now, we did talk about...
I won't sing the announcement song.
Okay.
Now I have to sing it, though, because then everybody's going to want to know what it is.
Oh, are you sure?
No,
okay, go ahead.
This is a girls' camp song, you know. Somebody sits up and says, I have to make an announcement before you can eat. And somebody says, announcements, announcements, announcements! Hurry up and make it short, make it short, make it short. Hurry up and make it short, we are waiting.
Oh, okay. There was a different version that we sang in day camp or whatever it was. Yeah, day camp.
What did you sing?
It was a similar, it was a variation on that. But anyway, I don't want to go too long into the digression here.
Okay.
We have some announcements. I think we already mentioned that we're already doing interviews in December, but we have dates, specific dates. So
you could be my date.
Okay, that sounds good. I always like that. I'm going to pull up the calendar here and let you know when our interviews are going to be. So our first interview is going to be on the 21st. It's going to be released on the 21st of December. Then we have an interview on the 28th. And then we have one on January 4th and one on January 11th.
Oh, really?
Well, January 4th and 11th is actually a two-part interview.
Oh, it's because it was the one that was long. We had to split it in half.
Yeah, I couldn't fit it into one interview, mm-hmm. so we put it in two. But so that's exciting. So three different, mm-hmm. Four different guests, because one of the interviews is with two guests. So we do have four guests.
That's true.
Which is fun. So I'm excited about all of them. They were all really fun to do, and they should be interesting, and they're all on totally different topics. And they're all aquarium topics, of course, so I'm not going to spoil it by telling you what they're about. I'm just going to say it'll be fun, listen for it, and they're already ready to go, so we know what's going to happen.
Okay, so you guys will have this one this week, and then if you want something on the podcast before Christmas, it needs to be for next week, and then you just get interviews. So, Merry Christmas.
Yeah, and so, yeah, and we'll be back with our normal format on... the week after that, so that like the third week in January, but mm-hmm. we are going to try to do more interviews if we can. So if you're interested in being on the podcast and you have a species that you'd like to spotlight or a project or anything that connects to aquariums, then let us know. It'd be fun. All right, so now on to other things.
Okay, so you have updates for us.
Yes. The first one is about cyanobacteria. I think it's pretty much licked, pretty much gone.
Hooray!
It was close to that last time, but it's even further now. I don't think there are going to be any issues.
Hasn't been coming back.
Yeah, I think it's kind of fixed. So all the methods of destruction of cyanobacteria seem to be effective, all the ones that we ended up using. And I actually posted a video on the YouTube channel about that, but it was cool. I think a lot of it had to do with the water movement. I needed to increase that. Seachem Flourish Excel seemed to help, you know, the extra water changes, the replacing the filter media, all these different things, the reduction of the photo period all seemed to help, but it's the tank's looking good. If you want to check it out, there'll be some videos coming up on the YouTube channel that you can check out and see how it's doing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know what that kind of reminds me of?
What?
Which is only slightly a tangent.
What?
It's more of a encountering things that I learned about through... doing podcasts with you in the rest of the world.
Uh-huh.
Tangent thing.
Okay.
We read this book. I got a book from the library. It's just a fiction book. It's like an urban fantasy. So, there's like vampires and werewolves and whatnot magic in the normal world. That kind of book. But they had this bacteria that was essentially turning people into zombies. But they made it be a mycobacterium.
Which is really funny.
And we both read the book. I read it and then Russ read it. And I kept saying, did you get to the funny part yet? And he's like, how would I know what part? I'm like, you'll know when you get there.
And yeah, for those of you who may not know, maybe you haven't listened to our older podcasts. when we talked about that a lot, or the interview with Diana Wellstead about it, you know, or anything like that. Mycobacterium is the genus of bacteria that causes several problems, some for humans, some for fish, but at least one of the species causes mycobacteriosis in fish, also known as fish tuberculosis, piscine tuberculosis, fish TB. It's called various things.
And it's awful and horrible.
It's an awful, horrible disease.
And so it was awfully, horribly appropriate that it would turn people into zombies.
Right. So it was kind of funny. Actually, human tuberculosis is in the same genus, as I remember.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But, you know, there are very different effects. Humans can get fish the same disease from the bacterium, but it usually just causes granulomas in their skin, localized areas. And it, yeah, it's a different sort of thing. It doesn't get into your lungs or anything like that in humans, the ones that affect fish. But anyway,
so that was my terrible disease. Sort of tangent.
Because if Kelly hadn't done the podcast on mycobacteriosis, she would not have recognized that as significant. But she did.
You're so proud of me.
I am. I think that's cool. All right.
Okay, what's next?
Well, I may have mentioned that I was attempting to get some hornwort to put in the tank to battle the cyanobacteria, because it helps to outcompete it, and it actually excretes allelopathic chemicals that damage cyanobacteria, fight against it. And hornwort is notoriously brittle, and getting it in the mail is hard to do. You can pack it very well, and it tends to just kind of fall apart. So when I got some, I was happy to get it, and I also got some very nice freebies with it, so thank you. But it, you know, it didn't do all that well on the trip through no fault of the sender at all. It's just a brittle plant.
It's hard to deal with.
So the there were a few stems that I thought, oh, maybe I'll try. They were just bare stems. All the leaves had fallen off. They just shed them. They're very brittle. Anyway, I put them in the tank, hoping that they do something. And yesterday I noticed that a couple of little sprigs are sprouting.
Oh, good.
So it...
maybe it will come back.
I'm hoping it's going to come back. It's starting to, and if it just keeps going the way it is, it'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And in a month or two, I'll have a big, happy crop of hornwort going in there, which that is what I'm hoping for. So that's exciting. Another thing is that I was filming the other day the multi-tank, because it's really fun to watch them do fun stuff. Do you remember some of the things that the multis are doing?
They redecorated.
Yeah. Yeah, one of the things that they do is they dig down in the substrate and make a pit where their shells are, like the center of their territories where the shells are, and there's a big pit around it. So they'll pick up bits of the sand and spit it at the perimeter of their territory and often onto shells of other fish, and it's kind of funny. But several of the fish had dug all the way down to the glass at the bottom of the tank, and at the same time there were shells at the edges of their territories that they can buried either completely or nearly completely buried, which is kind of fun to watch. It's also interesting to see, even though they're tiny fish with tiny little territories, they very strongly defend those tiny territories, and they seem very clear about where who's got what part and where they are in the tank, and it's fun to see. So we've been enjoying watching them claim their territories, and I filmed some of that. And then there appear to be two pairs in the tank. There's one that is one pair that's right in the center of the tank, in the central shell bed, and there's one slightly to the left of it, kind of at the base of an Anubias plant. And their territories are adjoining, and they have territorial disputes all the time. And that's really funny to see. So, but I was taking videos of this and watching, especially the pair in the center of the tank was... doing a lot of courtship behavior. The female would do these little dances and try to attract the male over to the shells, and she'd go up and bite him on his ventral surface and then swim down and do this little sideways dance, a wiggle dance near the shells to try to entice him down in there. And I thought, these two are going to spawn pretty soon. And the parting shot in the video, I mentioned something about, and this is a preview, you're going to get this video before this information before anybody else on the podcast or on the YouTube channel, but anyway, said something like, I wouldn't be surprised if these two will be presenting me with fry very soon, something to that effect. And just a couple of hours after I recorded that, I was watching the tank and I saw this little thing dart up while I was feeding the fish Daphnia. It darted up and it was a fry, and there are several fry in there. I don't know how many, but these are the healthy multis, not the ones with some developmental issues, if you want to call it that, skeletal problems, whatever. These are the healthy multis in the main multi tank, and they're a fry, and I don't know how many, but I see them dart up from the shells in the central shell bed once in a while. I wouldn't be surprised if the other pair has some too, but at least I know this first pair has some. And so I've been feeding them microworms, and whenever I do, they'll dart up out of the shell and then zip right back in. And I think what happens is when they're first hatched, they're very, very shy, and they tend to just stay right near the bottom, except when they dart up to grab a piece of food or something like that. But as soon as they get a little older, they start getting a little bolder and swimming up higher and out into the water column more, so it's fun to watch them. I did notice an interesting thing, too. My first batch of multis, the ones that I purchased first, didn't seem to like microworms. The adults didn't like them. They didn't pay attention to them, is what I should say. They ignored them when I put them in the tank. But this batch is very interesting in that they will go after and actively pursue the microworms. And I don't know if that's because it was a food they grew up with, and they kept eating that as an adult, and so they were familiar with it. But anyway, I've been adding more microworms to the tank. A lot of Daphnium microworms is what I've been feeding them, as well as Omega-1. I'm actually giving them marine pellets because they're the only ones I could find in the pet store that were 0.5 millimeters because they really need very small food. And Omega-1's a pretty good brand, in my opinion. I use it. I like it. And I could find those. And when I looked at the ingredient list between the marine pellets and the freshwater pellets, it's almost the same. There's some garlic in the marine pellets. And I think a couple of the ingredients, their orders are switched. But other than that, didn't we? We went through it together in the store. We were both reading it. Kelly was reading one, and I was reading the other at the same time. One of us was reading out loud, and the other was following along. We determined the ingredients were essentially the same except for garlic. And so knowing that garlic is in freshwater foods and it doesn't cause any problems, decided just to try it. It seems to be working great. So that's what we're using. And that, along with the Daphne and the microworms, it seems to be going well. Now, final news. I was perusing our local classified, you know, online classified column, whatever you want to call it, the other day, and noticed that they had some Julitochromis marlieri, or marlieri, or however you want to say it. Julitochromis, for those of you who may not know, are Tanganyikan cichlids, and they tend to be kind of elongate. They have interesting color patterns. Most of them have like a black.
It's almost kind of checkerboard.
Yeah, checkerboard. They're actually called checkerboard Julies sometimes. So
yay me!
Because they do look kind of like a checkerboard. They have this checker pattern. All Julitochromas kind of have, well, I shouldn't say all, but many of them have a dark color and then a very light color, either a white and a black, or a white and a black and an off-white, or some of them are black and yellow, different colors, you know, like this. And so these have this very contrasting color, and then their pectoral fins are yellow, and then they have some, like, a blue border along their caudal fin, and I think in some of the distal ends of their anal fin and their dorsal fin, too. So they're quite pretty, quite striking fish. And I saw them there, and in the description it said, I have a pair that they seem to have paired up, and I can't keep them anymore because they're eating my Trophius fry. And so now they're in my sump, and I would like to trade them for female bristlenose. And so I said, ooh, I've got a female bristlenose. Mm-hmm. I've been interested in getting Julitochromis for a while. In fact, should I tell them about the first time?
Yeah.
Okay. When I was a kid, I was no older than 11. I may have been younger, somewhere between 9 and 11 years old. As a Cub Scout, we took a field trip to the local university where they have this hallway that is connected. On one side, it's got biology lab rooms. And on the hallway side, they've got holes cut in the wall, essentially, and fish tanks up against there. So all these are the lab fish tanks. Some of them are quite nicely aquascaped and things like that, you know. they're not just sterile lab tanks, but they're connected to the lab. But on the side of the hallway, it just looks like a display tank. And they've got quite a few of them. I don't know how many exactly. I don't remember.
At least half a dozen.
But yeah, at least half a dozen of them. And some of them are quite large, like, you know, 200 or 300 gallons, maybe even more. That one might have even been closer to 500. I don't know. But that one with the turtles that you were talking about.
It was pretty big.
They had, like, channel catfish in there. It was really big tank. I don't know how big it is. But we went there when I was a Cub Scout. So let's say I was 10 or so, right around there. And I saw these julitochromas. I didn't know they were called julitochromas at the time, but I recognized them as cichlids, I believe, and noticed that they had a pair of them and then a whole bunch of fry, and this is a big tank. This was probably at least 125, maybe 240. I don't know what it was. I have no idea. It wasn't a standard tank size. It looked like it was custom built, but it was a big, big tank, so I shouldn't even shoot out numbers, but it's a large tank, and it just had all these julitochromas fry of different ages and sizes in there. I thought, that is really cool. Someday I would like to have fish like that. And then, you know, years later, I attended that university. And so did Kelly, which is, of course, we happened to meet there. And we would go down into that hallway once in a while and have lunch and watch the fish and the turtles and whatever, the creatures in there. And they still had the same tank with julitochromas in it, presumably descendants of those originals that I saw when I was 10. And this is more than 10 years later. I still have that tank. I don't know. Now, it's been years since we've been back there, so I don't know if they even still have that tank or even that building. For all I know, it might be gone. But it was kind of cool, and I liked those fish a lot. And I was never really in a position to have Tanganyikan cichlids, but, you know, got the multis and was thinking about it, and also thinking about the problem with the fry that needed to be... I needed to do something about these multi-fry that were being born with, you know, spinal deformities. I have confirmed that some of the ones that are descended from that tiny multi with a skeletal, misshapen spine... some of the fry have that issue too, and the other ones are probably carrying it.
And it's not really what you want in the gene pool.
I don't want that in the gene pool of the multis, so that's why I've separated her. And the father, of course, has a mouth issue. He can't close his mouth entirely. So there are some real problems there, and I don't really want to
perpetuate
those issues. So I was trying to think what to do. I really don't want to, you know, just drop them in the frog tank or anything. But I wasn't sure what to do. And so then I thought, what if I build a community tank and put, you know, the julitochromas in there, and then I put on the other side of the tank, I can put the multis with some shells, and at least the adults should be fine in there. They shouldn't have problems, shouldn't be eaten by the julitochromas, but the fry probably will be, and that's better because it's a more natural way, and I don't have to do it myself, and it's, you know, that's part of what julitochromas naturally do. It's my understanding is they are shaped the way they are so they can reach into crevices like shells and pull out fry and things like that. So it would be a natural way to deal with it, and I wouldn't have to feel quite as bad that the fry are getting eaten because it's more like, you know, the law of the jungle or whatever you want to call it. So I think I'm going to do that. What I'm planning on doing is setting up the 29-gallon tank that I got as a temporary tank for the goldfish, now that they're back in their 37-gallon tank. Just set that up and let them go. You know, have the julitochromas as well as the multis breed in there, and everybody's happy.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm going to plan on doing. And it'll be fun to set that up and slowly get the tank into the setup that I want to get it into. So I think that's where we are. The julitochromas are a little bit touchy about acclimation and so on, but they seem to be fine. It took a while to acclimate them. Did some drip acclimation, and I used some prime to drip into the bag to make sure that we weren't causing any ammonia burn issues or anything, although the fish hadn't been in the bag very long because Kelly came to pick me up from the
bus stop,
and the place where this guy lived happened to be really close to the bus stop.
About 2 minutes.
Yeah, 2 minutes drive from the bus stop, which was nice. So we went and picked them up at his house. He had this really big tank. It was probably a 6 foot long tank, 2 feet deep from front to back, and about 2 to 2.5 feet tall. Big acrylic tank, LED lighting. And he had some Trophrius, I think he said Trophrius Bouchardi, in there. And it was interesting because I'd never seen so many Trophrius together in a tank at once. They were schooling. Quite nicely. Yeah, schooling mm-hmm. tightly. I don't know a whole lot about Trophrius myself. I knew they were Tanganyikan fish. I knew some of them were very brightly colored and highly sought after, but I didn't know much else about them, really. And it was fun to see them. Kelly was saying they weren't really that brightly colored. They were kind of dark.
They were kind of dark gray or like really dark chocolatey kind of colored.
Yeah. But it was cool to see them all swimming together in a school. I liked that.
Yeah, that was neat.
And he wanted to put the bristlenose in there. There were a few other bristlenoses in there. And he was hoping for a female. And so I sent him pictures of mine because we weren't entirely sure. It's kind of a, some are clear cut. This is female, this is male. This was somewhere in the middle, so we weren't sure. But he was willing to take the risk because he said he took them out because the Trophrius, fry were being eaten. And so he just figured, I've got them in my sump. They're not doing me any good there. I can't even see them in there unless, I open up the cabinet and look at them. So I'm just going to get rid of them. And then if I get a bristlenose out of it, that's great. So it worked out nicely. He was happy. We were happy. And now the Julitochromis seem to be happy. So it'll be fun to see how that goes. I think that's about it for this week.
Yeah, I think that's about everything.
So, thank you for joining us once again. And until next time,
may the fish
be with you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. To leave comments or questions that could be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.